spend my dollar.
It's not about what you want. It's about what you're willing to do to get it. Run it again.
Hello and welcome.
I'm not going to, so quit asking.
When you give me a hard time.
For the listeners that didn't get to go.
This is the payback.
Alabama wins!
What you did last year really doesn't matter.
Our goal is to have the kind of team that nobody wants to play.
Hi.
Hello and welcome to a mailbag edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. We're going to take a few minutes today and break out three questions that are percolating around the college football landscape as well as the Alabama camp. And I'm going to start with one question. I think this is the favorite, one of my favorite questions that we've gotten from sort of an email thread that we have with some of our Zoom member participants. Speaking of the Zoom, join the member program. The Zoom calls 1 and 2 are scheduled, and those invitations or those meeting announcements will go out shortly. So if you're a part of the program, you'll receive that. And we'd like to have as many people participate with us as possible because those were a whale of a good time last year. And we expect that they're even going to be better this year. So Wayne asked a question and Cole paraphrased it. Hey, this is a really talented team. Where's the leadership coming from? And when I think about that, it kind of reminds me of 2010, 2014, very, very talented teams. But there were some lapses on those teams. And I think those were voids or leadership voids. And so this is, we think about Alabama beats Alabama. And so this is a legitimate question. Where does the leadership come from? So I'm going to run through some thoughts and perspectives like we do. This is conjecture. I'm not in the building. I'm not walking the sidelines. I don't have any level of access that I wish that I did. And sometimes I think that I do, but I do not. And so this is all conjecture based on what I'm seeing, what I'm reading, what I'm anticipating from some of these individual players. And so I'm going to list a handful of players and just sort of a blurb about them that makes me think that they're poised to stand out or step up into leadership capacities within the team this year. I'll be right on some and wrong on the others. And that's just the privilege or sort of the fun of doing some of this. So I'm going to start off in no particular order. I'm going to start off with Josh Jobe. We talked about last year, Josh being a guy that there was a particular play where he just got mad. He made a good play. He actually batted the ball away and made just a really good play, but he thought he could have made a better play. He thought he could have pulled the ball down. And so he just got mad at himself for making a good play, but not a great play. And so I think that's the fire in the belly that Josh has. I think that he has a more pronounced sort of leadership role being the number one corner this year. And I think that he's going to be a very solid example for some of the young defensive backs on the Tide roster. Jordan Battle is another defensive back that I think sort of fits in this category as well. In some of the interviews that he did last year, one of them I remember that he spent time talking about how he's a quiet guy, an unassuming guy. And that last year that he needed, now that he knew his role better, that he needed to step up and be louder and that he needed to lead some of the younger guys last year. And I think we saw some of that, certainly on the field. I think we saw some of that, and I think we're going to see more of that as he enters his junior season. I think he's really going to progress. Jordan Battle is going to be one of the leaders on the field in terms of play and production. I think he's going to be one of the better safeties in the conference, if not country, and I think he's going to be a leader in the locker room for this Alabama team. Phil Mathis, he's a longstanding contributor, a very vocal player. He went to SEC Media Days. He's been in a couple of the interviews. I think that's sometimes a signal that the coach perceives those players as leaders. We'll talk about some of those other guys today, probably not all of them, but I think Phil Mathis is well positioned to be a leader. This is a player that could have left. I think he would have been drafted, but he came back to play on the 2021 team. And so I think he's invested in the success of the team. He's invested in having a bigger role, and he certainly came back for this team to be successful. And I don't think he'll shy away from communicating when the need arises. Brian Robinson and Chris Owens are two other guys that I would put into that category. Both of them with Phil could have left, could have gone pro. They all came back. Both of them have been in interviews, post-practice interviews. And so I think that speaks to sort of a vision that the team has or that the coaching staff has for them. Chris Owens, even the way that he presents himself, comes across as a fun-loving guy, but certainly a leader. And he's been in the program, played center behind just a laundry list of star players. And I think he recognizes what good leadership looks like. And from the center position, I think he's going to provide it. So those are a couple of additional guys. Evan Neal is a little more quiet player. At least that's my perception of him. But he is a beast. He's a hard worker. We've probably all seen the video of the box jumps that he does for a 360, 340-pound guy. I think he's dropped some weight. But 340 pounds is still huge at 6'7". He's still one of the first off the bus type guys. And he strikes me as like an E.F. Hutton. If you're old enough, you remember the commercials. When he speaks, people will listen. And I think that he probably is not boisterous. I don't think he's vocal in sort of a crazy sort of way, but I think that when he speaks, that the team is going to listen, and certainly he leads by example with his hard work. There's been interviews, you know, examples of him speaking wisdom into the true freshman lineman, J.C. Latham. And we'll talk about him as we wrap up, as we do a review on week one of camp. But I think Evan Neal is already speaking into some of these younger guys. And I think he's going to be a leader, really a pillar across the offensive line and in the locker room as well. Henry Toa-Toa. Thankfully, we can call him Hank. Now, he's a new guy, and you think, well, how is he going to be a leader? So, some of the teammates, they don't even yet really know him. That's true, and that's certainly fair, but he's a known commodity. He comes in as one of the best players in the conference, certainly Tennessee's best player, and joins our team, and is day one shows up ready to work. Day one knows the playbook as well as some of the other youngsters showing up. Now, he had the advantage that he played it for Jeremy Pruitt at Tennessee, but nonetheless, he came in ready to work, came in knowing the system, and he's going to step into day one starter status. And I think that's going to be a model for some of the younger players. I also think that coming from Tennessee, he's seen it bad. He has seen sort of the worst. What can it look like when the team is down, is losing, is not performing, is deflated? He has seen the worst of it. And he came to Alabama to experience the best of it. And I just have this sense that if things look like they might go sideways, if someone looks like they might go sideways, if someone exhibits, hey, like that smells like what we had at Tennessee, I think that he'll speak up and sort of preserve the culture that Saban has presented. I think there's a faction of youth within this team, that it's not like splintering off and we have divisiveness across the team, but I think there's almost like an unofficial leadership council, if you will, with some of the youngsters on the team. Again, not in the locker room, not at practice, so this is speculation and conjecture on my part, but I think of a Malachi Moore, I think of a Bryce Young, I think of a Brian Branch, maybe a Jace McClellan, even, you know, Jalen Milroe, a true freshman, Will Anderson. I think these types of players, and there's others, Taron Arnold, a true freshman. I just think there's a nucleus of some of these young guys that are going to sort of self-police, that they won't necessarily need a senior or fourth-year junior to step in and sort of lead the way, that they will self-police. They came to Alabama for a reason. They were part of highly, highly ranked recruiting classes. They're not afraid of competition. And they know that they have sort of the Saban iron sharpens iron mentality, and that they're going to work together and provide leadership for the team. Again, all conjecture on my part. I'm not walking the halls of practice fields, but this is what I think in terms of leadership across this 2020 21 team. I do think if we look back at 2020, one of the most challenging football seasons that, you know, in many respects, any of us have seen, COVID, civil unrest, the march. I think it was an unparalleled season in terms of distraction. It was also unparalleled in terms of success. And I think that planted very deep seeds. That team last year had significant leadership that came back that sort of made the season happen, so to speak. And I think that served as an example and planted very deep seeds on this roster that will benefit in terms of leadership, not only in 21, but I think 22 as well. So great question there in regards to leadership. Those are some of the thoughts that I have. Question two, name, image, likeness. It's a real complex, you know, what do I think about this, right? It's a real complex topic. I don't think there's an answer that we can give today that sort of sums up, you know, what it's going to look like for the future. So these are some thoughts, some ideas, maybe even some predictions that we can watch as NIL sort of unfolds, not only this season but subsequent seasons. I think this name, image, likeness, I think it squeezes the middle class within college football. And a lot of the changes that we see in college football are not designed, but they have the intention of squeezing the middle class. I think teams that already get the most attention will continue to get the most attention. Programs that are already dominating the landscape will continue to dominate the landscape. These teams are already getting the most eyeballs, the most TV exposure, the most media exposure, the most articles written about them. And so those players that are on those teams are almost by definition going to be more popular, more viewed, more marketable. And so as name, image, likeness becomes a recruiting tool, where can I go to build my brand as an individual? Where am I going to go? I'm going to go to the programs that are already at the top of the heap. There's always going to be exceptions, but that's going to be sort of the gravitational pull. And you're going to have players that would have gone to a middle-class team. They're going to go to sort of these upper-class teams. And even if they're in a backup capacity, the NIL platform is set up for them such that they should still have success. So I think the rich get richer, the middle class gets squeezed in the NIL program. I think water finds its level. What we're seeing right now, and the NIL has only been active since July the 1st, so even just a matter of weeks, it feels like the dot-com boom in the 2000s, right? And they were in the late 90s, early 2000s, right? It feels like pets.com, right? There was no monetization plan for some of these websites, but let's get these websites because they're going to be valued commodities, but no one knew how to use them. Now we look back and people have been very, very successful marketing on the internet. But at the time, all the tools were there, but the knowledge wasn't. And so the NIL feels a lot like that. So water is going to find its level in NIL just like it did, just like it has in the internet, right? You know, the Wild West days are over in many respects. And now it's a market where the rates are known. It's a market that is a more intelligent market. There's more information. There's more knowledge. It's a much more knowledgeable market. I remember reading an article back in the day where they were valuing in the financial reports, like the dollars of eyeballs or the value of eyeballs on their websites. Well, that's almost a useless or almost a valueless stat, especially when there's no monetization on your website. It doesn't matter how many people go to your website if you don't have a monetization strategy. And none of that really existed sort of back at that time. They were valueless metrics, but nonetheless, they were being sort of propped up. And that's what I think this NIL feels like. I think water's gonna find its level. If we think about Malachi Moore, Hawk and Sweet Tea for a college football player, that sounds about right, right? Bryce Young getting almost $1 million for whatever it is that he's marketing, that just sounds strange. That sounds odd. I'm certainly not rooting for him to fail, but does that sound like a really good investment? I don't know. What if he's just a really good player, but not, you know, sort of otherworldly? Is that what if he bombs? What if there's an injury? And again, rooting for none of this, but then that's a bad investment, right? Now, if he goes on and wins a couple of Heismans, then maybe he resets the market and future players are really able to benefit. But there seems an imbalance. I think we're seeing the Clemson quarterback is going to be on some Dr. Pepper commercials. That's going to be interesting. Is that a distraction? I don't know. We'll see. Ohio State, Quinn Ewers, who, by the way, looks like Steve Perry's little brother, reclassified. This should be his senior year from in high school, and he reclassified so that he could join the college program. Now, that may be really good for him, and he may be able to cash in, and he may enter a quarterback competition certainly a year ahead of when he would have, and maybe that benefits him from a competition standpoint. But what does that do from a roster management standpoint? That just feels like a negative event that sort of landed in Ohio State's lap there. And so that's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. NIL, another sort of factor. I think we're going to see a lot of cheesecake. And it's hard not to sound like either a pervy old man or sort of a brimstone evangelist when I say this and think about this. But a lot of college athletes, maybe not football athletes, but a lot of college athletes, they are looking to boom or to grow their social media followers. And so they'll make money based on sort of monetizing their follower count and being an influencer, whatever some of this even means. Some people are going to do that because they're funny. Some people are going to be able to do that because they're creative or are clever. Some people are going to do that just because they're a popular athlete and that gives them a level of fame. And you know what? Some people are going to do that because they're just darn fun to look at. And when you start building your social media presence on that, where can that go? Connect those dots there. Overall, I think NIL is positive. I think it's appropriate that that these athletes, that these players, that these college students, that they are able to cash in on their performance. They're able to cash in on their level of fame. I just think there's the potential for this to be a little bit of a bumpy ride until sort of the market, if you will, is defined. And so that'll be an interesting thing to watch. Question three, and we'll wrap with this one. What do I think about Texas and Oklahoma joining the SEC? And there's a lot to think about it. So let me just run through some quick thoughts. Texas, sort of the whole saga, right? The whole drama of Texas and Oklahoma joining the conference, it seemed to unfold really, really quickly. And what did the media rights for them don't expire in the Big 12 until, 2025? And so that's the earliest, unless it's otherwise negotiated, that's the earliest that they could join the conference. And so what that leads me to believe is this was not for public consumption. I think someone found out and made it public. And who do I think found out? I think it was Texas A&M. And they demonstrated themselves as the Karens of the conference. They really just went hog wild for a little bit. They're really talking about a gentleman's agreement with an otherwise deceased former SEC commissioner. And they really demonstrated what I would term a real lack of self-confidence. They felt that they couldn't compete in the program if Texas joined. And that may end up being true, but that level of self-awareness or that level of lack of self-confidence, given how much better they are than as Texas right now, was really, I would say, surprising. And I think ultimately it embarrassed them, and I think they came to realize that. What they should have done is said, yes, how fast can we get Texas in the SEC? How can they be here tomorrow? Can we play them in the opening week of the season? That's how fast we want SEC. We want them in the conference. That's how fast we want to have a green light to play them, because we've built up our program and we will boat race them right now. And let's beat them while we can, because ultimately the flip side is Texas A&M has a reason to be, maybe not a right, but it's certainly a reason to be scared about Texas joining the conference. Texas is going to win big by joining the SEC. If it helped Texas A&M a little bit, it is going to be rocket fuel for Texas. And so frankly, not only should Texas A&M be arguing, let's get them in the conference as fast as possible. The entirety of the SEC should be arguing that, so we can attempt to keep them under our thumb by playing them. If Texas has the next 3 years to recruit the hell out of being in the SEC while not actually being in the SEC, then they're going to build up their team before they come, before they're actually competing and playing in the SEC. If they have to promote themselves being in the SEC while they're getting the daylights beat out of them by the likes of South Carolina and Mississippi State and Ole Miss and Missouri and Kentucky, then that's going to be a much harder sell for them. So if they are not, if they are able to put off joining until 2025, that's really a win for them because they can recruit as if they are in the conference, but they don't have to get battered and beaten by being in the conference. And then, and like I said, when they join in a couple of years, they'll have a much better team. What other thoughts? Texas and Oklahoma joining the conference. I wonder. Texas is known as a bad neighbor. Teams have left the conference to get away from Texas. So I wonder what teams like Missouri and Arkansas think. They've shared a conference with Texas before, so that would be interesting. I think Oklahoma, let's think about Oklahoma a little bit. I have sort of a little pet theory that's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. Oklahoma and Texas in the Big 12 are they're about approximately, I would say they're equals. Texas, I think, has a little more cachet, but Oklahoma is dominating the conference. So they are sort of, you know, tango and cash in the Big 12, if you will. They're, you could call them equals. When they're in the SEC brand is going to legitimize Texas in a way that it will not Oklahoma. Coming to the SEC kind of makes Oklahoma look like Texas's lackey. Oklahoma is so much the better program than Texas right now in the Big 12. But Texas says, hey, why don't you come with me? Let's go over here. And Texas knows, and Oklahoma probably does too, because I think they have sort of daddy issues with Texas. They say, let's go over here to the SEC. And Texas knows that they will end up the better of the two programs when they get the branding, the SEC branding. They're able to siphon off some of the recruiting that Texas A&M is getting. And frankly, they're going to be able to siphon off some of the recruiting that Ohio State is getting. Ohio State has some success recruiting in the state of Texas. Oklahoma is going to net out about even. But what they have now netting out even is probably a 9-win team or maybe a 3-loss team in the SEC. Texas, if they siphon off some of the recruiting from A&M and they siphon off some of the recruiting from Ohio State, maybe they keep a guy from going to LSU, maybe they grab a guy out of Louisiana that they otherwise wouldn't have. Now, Texas all of a sudden has something to play with there. They are going to buoy themselves up. Oklahoma, they won't have to change at all to not be as good of a program. Their team on the field may be equally as talented, but it's a 3-loss team in the conference. And so I think that's going to be an interesting thing to see play out. Ohio State, we talked about them. And I really start to think about, man, is Greg Sankey playing 3D chess here? Let me grab Texas from a state from which Ohio State annually picks up four guys. We mentioned the Ewers kid straight out of Texas. And so if that's 2, 3, 4 guys a year that's not going to Ohio State, they're going to Texas. Within now, those kids are SEC players, and we've just taken a sliver of capability away from Ohio State. That's interesting. That's interesting. I don't know if it's true, if I'm reading too much into it, but I think that's interesting. I think if you look at a team like Tennessee in the program, in the existing conference, I think this just heaps misery on those guys. Like, holy hell, we are falling in this conference as it is, and you bring two teams ahead of us that are immediately ahead of us and really sort of tamp us down. It's going to be much harder for a team like Tennessee to right themselves and look, I'm not upset about that. The Big 12 remnants, I think they're nearly dead in the water. What they need to do, there's this whole sort of discussion, the media rights that Texas and Oklahoma have that they don't have, that the conference owns them. They've signed them over to the Big 12, and that's standard for sort of group negotiation for a conference. Everyone signs over their media rights so that the conference has the power, the authority, the legal ability to negotiate contracts on behalf of the individual teams, right? And so these contracts for Texas and Oklahoma run out just ahead of the 2025 season. And so the thought is, you know, SEC can buy those rights out early, or they don't join the conference until 2025. We've talked about reasons why other teams in the SEC should try to welcome these teams in early. Don't give them time to recruit with the brand without having to play the brand. That's certainly one thing. The Big 12, the remaining teams in the Big 12, they would do very well to negotiate some sort of alliance with the SEC, some sort of play rotation with the SEC, because when they lose these, when they lose Texas and Oklahoma, they truly, they're dead in the water. The value of their media rights tanks. And it's a collection of teams, frankly, that no one wants. Once you take out, you know, the top two, who else in the conference is, I want to say they're not valuable, but as media commodities, as TV sort of brokers or contracts, what is there? Not a lot. And so what they should look at is how can they negotiate an alliance with the SEC to buoy the value, the TV right value of their remaining teams. And so that's certainly something that I think the Big 12, get mad, get over it, and plan for the future. And an alliance with the SEC, I think is a way they should go. What's next? I think that's the biggest question. And there's talk of what is it, the PAC and the Big and the ACC putting together an alliance to sort of freeze out the SEC. That'll be interesting. I think if the SEC got really aggressive and started picking individual teams, they wouldn't have to pick too many teams before they started to have some success there. So that'll be interesting. They could also use that as a negotiation tactic. You guys are going to try to form an alliance with us. That's cute. I'm going to place a phone call to Clemson, and I'm going to place a phone call to Michigan. I'm going to place a phone call to USC. If you guys are going to keep up these antics, then Sankey, I think Sankey could play that card. So I think the cards are really in Sankey's hands, and it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. But nonetheless, a couple of mailbag questions. Again, one of these questions was submitted in let's call it a Zoom team email thread that we stood up last year. And so if you're interested in joining the Zoom calls and maybe getting in some of those email threads, sign up to the member program, and we'll go from there. First two Zoom calls have been scheduled, and the invitations are forthcoming. Meanwhile, this has been another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Roll Tide.
Thanks for listening to the Alabama Football Podcast. We love that you're tuned in and hope that you enjoyed the show. We encourage you to reach out and let us know what you like, where we can improve, or just a shout out, a Roll Tide. We are where you are. iTunes, Facebook, Twitter, email newsletters, t-shirts, free roster downloads, and of course, on the web at alabamafootballpodcast.com. Check us out where you'll find easy links to your favorite way to follow the Tide. Got that, Coach?
Aye.
Of course. Roll Tide.